Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Fitter and Faster Coach's Corner. As always, I'm your host, Mike Murray. Today, I am proud and super excited to introduce you to our guest, Brent Rootsmiller. Brent's experience is extensive in the sport. His knowledge and understanding of every athlete's journey and coach's journey in our sport is endless. And his story is not only incredibly inspiring, but he's able to really connect the dots for many of us in terms of understanding the history of American swimming in our place in the swimming world, quite literally. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Oh, thank you. I'm really happy to be here, Mike. I appreciate the invitation, and thanks again.
Well, you know, you influenced so many people over the course of the last 20 or 30 years with what you did at Swimming World and what you're doing at the International Swimming Hall of Fame. And your story in and of itself is so amazing and inspiring, Brent. What has been a driving factor for you to contribute so much to our community in this space?
I never looked at coaching or being in the media as a business. I always looked at it as a responsibility. And when you take responsibility, at the end of the day, it's whatever it takes to be successful. And a lot of times,
you understand?
My computer's talking back to me, but to be responsible for something, it's not always the bottom line. And as far as we really live in a nonprofit world when it comes to sports, and so when you are responsible for something, you have to go well beyond, you know, the nickels and dimes of things. So just, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I always looked at any kind of thing that I looked at. It was more of a responsibility to do it right and get it right, to be fair, understanding, evolve constantly, not afraid ever to take huge chances. That's pretty much it.
You know, Brent, I think when a lot of people think about you and what you've contributed over the years to our sport, they think about courage. There's been so many times where, you know, you had to adapt with Swimming World and you had to change some things. And, you know, when I was an age grouper, like many of my compatriots, the first thing we did when we got that magazine was we rushed to the back to see if we made the top 20 in age group swimming. That was such like a seminal moment for so many of us. What was the thing in your swimming journey that made you decide, you know what, I think I'm going to give back to the sport, not only as an athlete and as a coach, but to get into the media space?
Well, I don't think I've ever planned to get into the media. I never planned on being a publisher. I think what someone once said to me, and you know, it was the ultimate compliment, was like, Brent, you never ran away from something, you always ran toward it. And that kind of hit me, you know. So the, you know, when you look at the challenges of reporting things and knowing that the landscape is constantly changing, and quite frankly, people don't want to pay for information. They can get it everywhere for free, so that becomes a real challenge. So I always looked at it like, you know, I don't want to be agenda driven journalism. I can't tell you, there's been so many times where I was pressured to take a specific stance on something. And you would have a strong belief in something, but you always had to present both sides of it. Not to get too esoteric, but there was a point in time where all news had to give a balanced both sides of an argument, and that the Congress did away with that. And people probably don't know that back I think it was in the 90s or something, where they said you no longer have to present both sides. You can become an opinion. So the things moved into, you no longer, you hear news, but then you hear people talking about the news. And that's really where we are today. Everyone talks about the news, and it's all opinion driven. And we've lost the balance elements to that. So I look back and yeah, we took on some really big issues with the East. We were taking on the East Germans, and we got a hold of the Stasi files when the Berlin Wall came down, and we exposed that. We caught China bringing drugs into Australia during one of the championships, and we had to expose that. It's a responsibility that I don't think everyone takes as serious today. It's like, I just want to get my opinion out and people can make what they want of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Swimming World played such a critical role in exposing a lot of those things. And one of the things, Brent, that I so appreciated as a swimmer growing up and early on in my coaching years was that I could use Swimming World as a resource. And there were so many great articles and so much good information in there outside of, you know, the coaching associations and all of those things. That was a huge resource. And one thing that I always noticed was there was an enthusiasm about the sport in the publication. Talk about how you tried to cultivate that and maintain it in the magazine.
Yeah. So how you create a community is really vital to being a sticky website. And the number one search word over the years has always been technique. Very interesting to me. And I always, and I come up through that as a coach. I was the stroke coach, the technique coach for Mission Viejo when we won the national championships. I think it was in 87. So I came up through that vein of technique. I'm trying to gather my thoughts here. So, the content needs to be, it needs to be evergreen, and. You know, I think the diversification today is everybody has their little channels on things, but the news cycle is only 24 to 48 hours, and you can report on news and you'd be the first to do this and the first to do this and you break this story. It was crippling because, you know, at the end of the day, it was such a fleeting element. So If I would look back now in my role, you know, I probably would have spent more time on a technique and training and evergreen things that when people got the magazine, they would hold that as a resource versus recapping so-and-so won this and so-and-so won that. I mean, that's, you know, everyone got into that game and everyone's in that game now.
Right.
So you need to be able to diversify, you know, your content and how you're presenting it and move in that direction. So I think that's a big space that's still open, and I think people can go to that, and I think that makes it more meaningful. You know, the other thing is short form writing versus long form writing. Mm-hmm. Short form is, you know, you got this gotcha headline. And then you got a paragraph, you know, and you get your views, you get your clicks, and you get your views. And then if you can create a controversy, then all of a sudden you got this long argument of people jumping in to give their point of view, da 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 da. And that drives stats, that drives statistics through the roof. And advertisers don't look at the and how rich the content is. They just want to know how many eyeballs are on this. So we've moved really far in one direction when you look at the pendulum of of what are you doing to drive views? And it can be as simple as something. I'm just going a little tangent here. And I'll circle back. My first wake up call was maybe it was MySpace. It was some social media element, and somebody put a question out. It was so ridiculous. It was with your toilet paper, paper up or paper down. And I stumbled on this, and there were 130 comments. You know, I paper up, no, paper down. Yeah. And I was like blown away. So when you capture that audience that's just, you know, rubberneckers or just they want to give their opinion, you drive the stats up for the website and the advertisers gravitate to that. And the big game, we're the number one this, number one that. But is it really meaningful content? So short form writing goes in that direction. So in my later years of swimming world, we're moving to long form writing, back to deep, really deep feature stories, stuff that is evergreen, that was, you know, really looked deep into a subject matter. And I think the pendulum swings in that direction. My hope is that there's a combination of getting a lot of people to jump into that conversation and allow the eyeballs to go enough that you can attract, you know, the advertisers that can support those platforms. But it's a wild, wild west out there right now. And I don't know. I'm hopeful that the pendulum will swing, but it's gonna take creating a community that is in association with the goals of other governing bodies. You know, what is ASCA's goals? ASCA's goals, they want to educate, they want to promote, you know, all those things. And if a media can tap into that, then hopefully they can bring that membership over into that, and you can fulfill a very significant role in the swimming community.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that, Brent. And there's a lot of stuff that you said that I want to unpack. And the first one is going to be a trip back down memory lane for me. And you probably don't remember this, but I was writing an article right after I graduated college, and Bob Clemmer told me to reach out to you. And I had said to you that, you know, Brent, I think I'm writing a little too much sentimentality. And you said, don't ever be afraid to risk sentimentality. It's meaningful. And you mentioned the long form article and how rich content can be. And we live in an era of clicks, likes, and shares. But it's very superficial on a lot of levels. If we can get back to, you know, some of those great articles that one of my old coaches, Chuck Warner, would write, there's so many people in our community that have so much to give back. And I really think that it's a platform for coaches to share their experiences. If we can get some of the best coaches in our country right now, a Ron Aiken or a Brent Arkey, you know, some of the younger coaches who are coming up, Chris Plum, to write some meaningful articles and content that we could share in a publication, that would go a long way. Forget about what we do at ASCA. We have ideas where we can do that, but we have an audience there that's mostly comprised of coaches. But sharing that sort of thing out in a publication where current athletes and age groupers can eat up that content, I think that would be pretty substantial.
Yeah, I would hope that could go in that direction. I think it comes to the various governing bodies to have a very specific educational goal or mission, and take away the independence of media. I understand all that, but there are some things that are that need to be exposed, and that's in our sport, and that's, you know, that's training, technique, you know, mental preparation, mental health, you know, to just a touch on a few. And I think journalists could really assist the governing bodies in communicating in those, in that regard, by showcasing those people who have a lot to say about those that subject, or giving case examples of it. You know, the question comes in, you know, is there enough money to pay the journalists to produce the content? And that's really the, you know, the challenge, I think. But I think it could be done if the various governing bodies all kind of understood that, you know, here's what we, the things that we want to communicate to the general membership, our membership, the public in mind, whether it be never swimming alone, or safety, or drowning prevention, you know, lessons or competition, you know, all of those things. Most governing bodies try to take it on themselves, and they create their own little, you know, journalist department, and now they create their own journal, and now they want to do their magazine, because the entry barrier to do all that stuff is so low. Swimming World was so great because the entry barrier was very high. Nobody could get into the publication business because it took blue lines, it took graphic artists, it took a lot. Now, I mean, you can be a one-man entity and make a big difference. But I think the opportunity is the general, you know, the general the governing bodies, whether it's ASCA, ISCA, USA Swimming, the Australian Coaches Association, NISCA. How many cuz are there? But you know, they all have the same goal. Let's really further the boundaries of mankind's athletic abilities or mental abilities and that kind of stuff. So I think the journalists have a place, have a role in that. Where that glue is and how that all comes together, you know, I can only point in directions right now.
Sure. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to get your opinion on how important is it for an NGB like a USA Swimming to recognize the significance and the impact of the grassroots level. Without, in my opinion, without those grassroots levels, without that coach coaching in some rural area or some desolate area, he's got 10, 15, 20, 60 kids. Without those people, we don't have an Olympic team. And I think it's really important for NGBs to understand that grassroots programs and coaches need to be supported. What have you seen in your journey in the sport that would give you an opinion on that?
Well, I'm a big believer in making nothing grows in the shadow. You have to shine light on something for it to grow. And yeah, I got an old saying, you know, is if the tree fell in the woods and no one was around, would it make a noise? And I'd say, no, it doesn't make a noise because the media wasn't there to report it. So to be able to showcase success at any level puts light on that person, and it actually inspires them more and more. So we came out with the Hasty High Pointers, where every month we would do, or four times a year, we would take young kids who are high pointers of invitationals, and we would showcase them. And then we would do like Swimmers of the Month, that kind of stuff. But I can honestly say that I can look back and we were showcasing people like Aaron Pearsall when he was 10 and, you know, in these, and you have to think that if a young kid gets ink, it's going to inspire them, you know, to go more. Now, the big debate is, are you giving them a big head? Are you making them, are they all going to be, is it Wally Morton who's got all the 12-year-old records in the world? I mean, Chris, is it Chris Morton? Morton's his last name. Anyway, I should know. But I don't think you need to be afraid of that. I think you have to recognize success where success is, and you have to put it on a scale. So yes, I think the more we can find vehicles to showcase success, whether it's the young up and coming kid or the up and coming coach, because anytime you do that, it inspires them to work harder. You know, if you got somebody, you say, you're doing that wrong. We're like, I give up. But if you got somebody, hey, you did that right. It's like, I can do better. And I think that carries over, and that's a responsibility to find those jewels, but you got to be balanced about it. And that's really important. You gotta be really balanced. You know, there's another argument. Should every kid get a trophy? I'm of the belief of, yeah, I am, but you know, at the end of the kid's career, they got this, you know, all these little trophies. The challenge is you can't have your whole identity tied up into a trophy case. So there comes a point in time where your whole self-image isn't a trophy case. And that is the challenge of the governing bodies, to take this star athlete who's 12, 13, 14, breaking Michael Phelps' record, 14, 15, 16. And then all of a sudden, when they're 21, 22, their whole self-image is based on medals and trophies. And then they become unbalanced. And when you become unbalanced, that's when mental problems occur. So all of it has to come in with a sense of balance. And I don't think we're doing enough to understand how to create a balanced athlete that's also highly successful and highly elite. But anytime you're the 1 or 2% of anything, you're unbalanced. I don't care what you say, but you got, and they find their balance either in alcohol or drugs, right, or something. That's how they find their balance. And we need to grow those athletes, great, good self-images, inspire them to continue because they're getting recognition. But you need to find that your whole life isn't caught up in the H2O.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you bring up, creating systems where we can inspire these athletes by highlighting things. And one thing that you do extraordinarily well, and everybody knows this, is you face challenges with what seems to be such a positive attitude. You've shared a lot of your health story over the last 5, 10 years. Talk a little bit about what you've
3 years,
learned.
3 years, not 5 or 10.
Yeah. Well, you've shared more of those last 3 years. And what have you learned inside of that journey where you have faced incredible odds, and you do it, Brent, with a smile, and you do it by sharing, and you welcome people who comment on your story, and you interact and engage. So many people are learning just watching you. So what have you learned facing these challenges?
Wow, that's a pretty deep answer. I'm still in the middle of it. I just started proton therapy. They found cancer in my spine and my spinal fluid and in my brain, and I just got another my first proton therapy yesterday, and I'll get 10 treatments. So what I learned from swimming, I'm applying. What I've learned as being a coach, I'm applying. And that is, first of all, there's no second place in my fight. Either I win or I die. I mean, that's the reality of it. But you have to accept that, first of all. What I learned and what I applied is in swimming, when you're in a solo sport that's very individualistic, how you visualize success in your particular event is a series of techniques, and coaches need to teach their athletes how to use visualization. But visualization to me is the highest form of prayer. So whenever you have to see an outcome that's very positive, and you have to, I firmly believe that we live on two, and I'm getting too deep here, but stop me if I go, you know, we have a conscious level where right now I'm talking to you and I'm thinking my thoughts out, but we also have a subconscious level. The subconscious level is where we plan our innermost thoughts, our innermost goals. So when you visualize something, you're basically putting thoughts into the subconscious of something that you want to happen. And that process of visualizing an outcome on the subconscious level, the subconscious doesn't know the difference between a real experience and an imagined experience. There is no difference between a real experience and an imagined experience on the subconscious level. I mean, you remember being in high school and picking up the phone? Well, we had rotary dials back then, but and then like, I'm going to call my girlfriend, but then you start, your heart would be like, oh, well, the dad answers, you know, and your body takes on this, you know, you start sweating, you take all these characteristics because the body really thinks it's, you know, it's happening. So how you control your thoughts is really vital for any kind of success. And I learned that through swimming and coaching, visualizing an outcome and then sitting back and letting it happen. And now I'm applying it, you know, to my own health. So that's the precursor to all success, I think, in anything. But the other thing that I've learned, and this is the big thing that I've learned, is I really believe we're all connected on this subconscious level. Now, this is really way out there, okay? But I just think we're all connected here. And they're showing some scientific discussion. I read some articles just recently where they're finding out that conscious is connected to the universe in some way. All right, so this is way out there. But
all good.
So what I did was I created Ruta Meller's Army on social media. And I did that because I knew that by me telling my story, I would create this energy that would come back to me in multiple ways. And I can honestly tell you, Mike, I never felt alone in my journey. Never felt alone. I'd be in the hospital, but I was in the hospital for 56 straight days. But I was always connected to people, and I felt their energy, and their energy really allowed me to bring it into my subconscious, and my body felt those positive things and allowed me to overcome some of my darkest days. I never felt alone. So what we learn as athletes and coaches to apply visualization or to out at some kind of outcome, or even pray for an event that you want to see, you have to constantly reinforce that in your subconscious. And that's the mental part of the sport, but you have to go out and practice it every day. And I would swim, I would hike, I would do everything I could to keep moving. But that's what you do when you're an athlete. But what good is it if we don't take that, what we've learned, and apply that to some other aspects of our life? I can remember being, whether or not I wanted to take over Swimming World, and I'm like, I was the marketing director at the time, but I could see something. And I thought, Brent, why don't you start acting like you're running the company? Why don't you start thinking like, yeah. And all of a sudden opportunities started appearing themselves, because that's what I planted the seeds in my head. So my advice to people in anything is, you don't need to know the outcome of where you're going to go, because all you need to do is take a first step in a direction. And that first step leads to a second step, to a third step. You've no idea what's beyond that, but all of a sudden an opportunity will come and there's a fork in the road. Am I going to go left or am I going to go right? And as you go down a direction, you'll end up someplace you never even thought of before. So my third takeaway from how I'm taking what I've learned from coaching and running organizations or whatever, is that it's the power of inertia. A body at rest tends to stay at rest. And a body in motion, once you go through boundary conditions and you move forward, will continue moving in a direction. So I can remember laying in the hospital bed, and I would just say, Brent, just put one foot on the floor. Just put one foot on the floor. And I knew if I put one foot on the floor, I'd put 2 feet on the floor. And if I put 2 feet on the floor, I'd stand up. And if I stood up, I'd walk over to that chair. And if I walked over that chair, I'd walk out the door, and I would walk a mile in a circle out on a hospital floor. That's inertia. That's taking it. So you don't have to know the outcome of where you're going to go. You just need to take a step in a direction. And you'll be surprised. And you marry that with visualization, you marry that with mental control, with action and balance, and you will be successful to your most wildest imagination.
Well, you talked earlier, Brent, about evergreen content, and that clip right there is going to be evergreen content. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. And I know that there are people out there that will continue to follow Ruta Miller's Army, and we hope that you keep posting so we can be a part of this journey with you.
Thank you. Yeah, I exceeded all expectations from Mayo, because my cancer was in my blood system, but somehow it crossed over into my nervous system. So we've conquered the circulation system, and now we have cancer in my nervous system. And Mayo hasn't seen this before. So I'm on an interesting path here, and I have to practice everything that I believe. So anyway, but there's a lot of good people out there in the sport right now, and there's a lot of I see some really cool stuff. And this Kyle Stockwell, I mean, he seems to be the heartbeat right now. He may not be the body or the soul, but he's the heartbeat, and I love that. And I see those little things, and he probably had no idea where he was going to go, but more power to people like that.
I can't wait to share that with him. That will make him so excited and fitter and faster. We just became a part of his channel sponsorship, so we're looking forward to it too.